case number 206255 and 206258, Michael Becker et al. Versus Helix U.S. Energy, Inc. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Boulder and Mr. Ballman, you may proceed for the appellants.
What's going on with the screen here today? Are we using this for some purpose?
We are not using this.
You could just turn it off. It's kind of a distraction. Thank you. Morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brian Bowdler on behalf of the appellant, Delek U.S. Energy, Inc.
Mm-hmm.
First off, congratulations to the newly admitted attorneys. And as for our time, Mr. Bowman, who representing the co-appellant, we are going to collectively reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Are you all splitting up your time? I see, 6 minutes apiece?
Yes, sir.
All right. Very well.
Your Honor, and may it please the court, when the district court denied Delek's motion to compel arbitration, the district court did make two correct determinations. First, it correctly determined that Mr. Becker is a party to a binding invalid arbitration agreement. Second, the district court did correctly conclude that this arbitration agreement contained clear and unmistakable evidence that Mr. Becker delegated questions of arbitrability to the arbitrator. From that point forward is where the district court erred. After making those determinations, the district court should have stopped its analysis and instead referred the matter to arbitration in order for the arbitrator to determine whether Delek had the ability to enforce the delegation clause and whether Mr. Becker's claim against Delek fell within the scope of the arbitration agreement.
What's your best authority for your proposition here?
Your Honor, I would turn your attention first off to there are three. First of all, the Supreme Court's decision in Henry Schein provides that once the court determines that there is a valid delegation clause, the analysis by the district court should stop and the matter should be compelled to arbitration. On another point, this court's decision in Blanton versus Domino's Pizza Franchising held that the incorporation of the AAA's rules, which this arbitration agreement provides, constitutes clear and unmistakable evidence of delegation.
Well, this was brought from Becker to Delek, right? And then Cypress intervened. Is that what happened?
That is correct, Your Honor. Mr. Becker initially sued Delek as the defendant in this case, and Cypress, as his employer, intervened into the action.
And Cypress was the employer, but Becker claims Delek is the employer.
That is correct, Your Honor.
But he didn't have a contract with Delek, did he?
That is correct.
Arbitrator to decide.
That is correct, Your Honor. There is no signed agreement between Mr. Becker and Delek.
I mean, your client isn't a signatory to the agreement you seek to enforce.
That is correct, Your Honor. Delek is not a signatory to the agreement. However, with there being a delegation clause, what Mr. Becker challenges is Delek's ability to enforce the delegation clause and the arbitration clause. This court a few months ago in Swigert held that the question of whether a third party can enforce a delegation clause and arbitration agreement is a question that is delegated to the arbitrator when there is a valid and enforceable delegation clause.
I thought the Supreme Court in Rent-A-Center, I guess this isn't in direct contradiction to your point, but I thought the Supreme Court in Rent-A-Center told us to treat the delegation provision as a separate antecedent agreement to the arbitration agreement. Is that accurate?
That is correct, Your Honor. The Supreme Court did hold that in Rent-A-Center. And with respect to Mr. Becker's challenge to the delegation clause, Mr. Becker framed this as a formation challenge. However, when you look at the actual substance of Mr. Becker's argument, he's actually challenging the scope of the delegation clause. He doesn't contest that he signed the agreement or that he's bound to the agreement or that the agreement does delegate questions of arbitrability. His argument is that he did not agree to arbitrate this claim and he did not agree to delegate enforceability to third parties of this claim.
What are you relying upon as far as text in the arbitration agreement between Becker and Cypress to allow a non-signatory to enforce that agreement?
Well, Your Honor, the delegation clause applies to any arbitration that is commenced under the terms of the agreement. It does not contain any limiting language that it must be between the signees of the agreement.
So you're relying on that particular provision, the language any arbitration commenced?
Correct. And then further, if you look at the arbitration clause and what claims are arbitrable under the agreement, it includes all claims that are connected to or arise out of or related to in any way Mr. Becker's employment by Cypress. His claim of against
the only reference in the agreement that I can see to your client perhaps might be in Section 1 of the agreement. Talks about a designated customer.
Correct, Your Honor. I believe that is Section 2 of the agreement.
Section 2, yeah.
Yes, which provides that Mr. Becker's employment with Cypress is conditioned upon Cypress.
So it's Delek's position that it is a designated customer under the employment agreement?
Well, Your Honor, we are the customer that Mr. Becker was employed by Cypress to provide services to. However, if you look at the arbitration clause, it is not limited to claims just between the signatories of the contract. It includes any and all claims that arise of or related to in any way to
right,
employment.
Right. But I'm just getting at, you agree that, I think I'm trying to be helpful here. Section 2, you are a designated customer, Delek is.
Yes, we are the customers for whom Mr. Becker was designated to provide services to.
Now, I mean, given that we treat the delegation provision as an antecedent separate agreement, the fact that that provision purports to, you know, delegate arbitrability to an arbitrator doesn't itself mean that an arbitrator decides whether the delegation provision itself is enforceable. Right?
Correct, Your Honor.
I mean, we have to say, okay, this delegation provision, delegating authority to the arbitrator, is enforceable before the arbitrator takes over.
That is correct, Your Honor. However, as I know this court held in Swain, that the question of whether a third party can enforce the delegation clause is a question that is delegated.
Swain?
I'm sorry, Swiger, Your Honor.
When was that one decided?
That was issued by the court in March of this year.
All right. Did you all, I don't recall a lot of talk about that case in the briefs, am I?
I do believe, Your Honor, that we did cite it in our briefing to the court.
Yeah, okay. I'll chase that down. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Derek Bowman, and I represent Cypress Environmental Management. I'm here today because it was Cypress that employed Mr. Becker, paid Mr. Becker, and determined that Mr. Becker is exempt from the federal overtime laws. There is no dispute that Mr. Becker and Cypress reached an agreement that provides that any controversy, dispute, or claim arising out of or relating to in any way their employment relationship must be arbitrated.
That's the arbitration agreement.
Yes, Your Honor.
We're really dealing with, apart from your venue, Northern District of Oklahoma argument, we're really dealing with the enforceability of the delegation clause here, aren't we?
Yes, Your Honor. That is a priority issue.
And that's antecedent to all the stuff that you just mentioned from the arbitration agreement.
Your Honor, the initial matter, the Northern District of Oklahoma is going to make the determination, but the priority issue is who decides, and ultimately who decides is the arbitrator. Mr. Becker...
What, though? I mean, the Supreme Court has, for better or worse, sliced this up into these gateway questions and antecedent questions. So this is an antecedent agreement, and the delegation provision is the very provision that gives the arbitrator the authority. They are challenging whether Delek, and we can talk about your client, can enforce that here. So
how do we don't, you know, we're not going to hand over to an arbitrator the question whether the arbitrator has authority to decide this issue, right?
Well, Your Honor, the non-signatory issues that are challenged, whether Delek can enforce this agreement, they don't come into play with respect to Cyprus's motion, where Cyprus stands apart as a signatory. There is no dispute that there is a valid agreement formed between Cyprus and Mr. Becker. That agreement, which is before the court, says that the arbitrator decides whether any particular claim is arbitrable under the agreement. Pursuant to Section 4 of the Federal Arbitration Act, Cyprus has moved as a party aggrieved by Mr. Becker's alleged failure.
Can I stop you there for a minute?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, that Section 4 of the Arbitration Act refers to a party aggrieved, right? Is that talking about a party to the, when it says party, does that mean party to the lawsuit or party to the agreement?
Your Honor, the Supreme Court has only addressed Section 3 and not Section 4, so there's no authority on what party means in Section 4, but either way.
Well, you tell me what you think, you know. We read words and interpret them in this line of work, so.
Certainly, Your Honor. A party to the lawsuit can move to enforce an agreement, which is, I think, the same as a party to an agreement, and I think that the question doesn't need to be decided because here Cyprus is both. It's a party to...
Okay. You don't have an opinion about what party means?
Well,
because, I mean, it's two totally distinct meanings, and that phrase is coming up again and again, and it would seem to matter which meaning applies.
Yes, John. I think that the plain meaning or the that would be suggested would be a party to the lawsuit. But again, Cyprus is an intervener, is a party to this lawsuit, and Cyprus, as a signatory of the agreement, is a party to the agreement. And again, Cyprus is aggrieved by Mr. Becker's alleged failure to arbitrate. This case is, the record evidence illustrates, about Cyprus. Cyprus has contracted with Mr. Becker.
Does Becker have a claim against Cyprus right now? I know Cyprus is an intervener.
No, Your Honor, there is no claim against Cyprus. But
so you're suggesting that Delek can enforce an agreement between Becker and Cyprus, even though Becker never agreed to it?
Yes, Your Honor. In Arthur Anderson, the Supreme Court makes clear that a non-signatory can move to enforce an agreement. But again, regardless of the fact that there are no claims against Cyprus, the Federal Arbitration Act isn't phrased in a way that asks about liability. It asks about grievance. And this lawsuit is about Cyprus. Whether there is a violation of federal overtime laws will implicate and question Cyprus's practices. It is only if there is a violation that then the ancillary question of whether Delek also exercised enough control over Mr. Becker to be an employer is reached. And again, Cyprus's contract with Mr. Becker that claims related to his employment come in individual arbitration. This lawsuit against its customer has breached that agreement, and that's why Cyprus is aggrieved.
You don't have to answer this, really, but there must be an indemnification provision that makes you guys worried about this, because otherwise, you know, they're just suing Delek.
Certainly.
It's not like some arbitration outcome is going to be binding on you in a later proceeding, probably.
There is an indemnification provision. Additionally, though, if there is a decision in a federal district court that says that Cyprus's pay practices were wrong under the guise of, you know, while he was assigned to Delek, that opinion would certainly be, you know, persuasive anywhere else. Additionally, if, say, Delek was unable to satisfy any judgment that came, Mr. Becker could certainly then turn around and sue Cyprus in arbitration as an alleged joint employer. And
why is it, do you think, that Becker didn't sue Cyprus directly?
I think Mr. Becker, he has an individual commitment to arbitrate by bringing this lawsuit in federal court. He asked to form a collective action and invite other Cyprus employees to join him. But I think that is a question for Mr. Birch.
Just to ask you one more quick question,
yes, sir.
Just to try to sum it up here. So if we're looking at the delegation provision as a separate agreement,
provision that delegates authority to the arbitrator. And the question is, who gets to interpret that for purposes of determining whether an arbitrator must decide whether Dela can enforce the arbitration agreement? You with me?
Yes, sir.
I know this is like way more complicated than it should be, it seems to me. Why is it that an arbitrator should decide whether he or she has been delegated authority to determine that issue of enforceability, as opposed to a court?
Your Honor, I don't think the arbitrator decides whether he's been delegated that authority. The delegation is clear through the incorporation of AAA rules. This Court said that that's clear and unmistakable evidence.
Okay, but, I mean, that's like, okay, there's a strong case for a certain outcome. It doesn't mean the arbitrator gets to make the decision. The question in this case, in one form or another, is whether a third party, a non-signatory to this arbitration agreement, can enforce it against a signatory, namely Mr. Becker, right? That's what this boils down to.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree with respect to Cypress's motion, and that was where the district court erred.
So you all, you're here saying, hey, you know, we're a signatory, and there's no question about whether a signatory can enforce it. Okay. Well, I guess maybe you're the wrong person to ask this question. You have an opinion about why, as to Delek,
sure,
the arbitrator gets to decide whether they can enforce the delegation provision that gives the arbitrator authority? It seems like a little, you know, out of sequence.
Certainly, Your Honor. With respect to Delek, the challenge is a general one. Mr. Becker says, well, I didn't agree to arbitrate with Delek. I didn't agree to arbitrate arbitrability with Delek. And it's the same thing as what came up in Rent-A-Center or in the Anderson case this court decided this summer. This agreement is unenforceable, therefore the delegation is. Or if this agreement is unconscionable, therefore the delegation is unconscionable.
Okay.
When you're making the same argument, then it is for the arbitrator to decide, because otherwise there's nothing left for the arbitrator to decide.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right. Birch?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Rex Birch. I represent Mr. Becker in this appeal. With me today is Olivia Beal. This is her very first appearance in a court as a newly minted lawyer. So congratulations to her and to our...
A lot of new lawyers here this morning.
Yes. The district court correctly denied appellant's motions to compel arbitration for one simple reason. Mr. Becker never agreed to arbitrate anything, arbitrability or otherwise, with the folks at Delek. And frankly, the analysis should stop there. The fact that a non-party to the controversy, and I want to talk about your question about Section 4 here in a second, has shown up and said, hey, we have an arbitration agreement, doesn't answer the question. The question is not whether or not Mr. Becker agreed to arbitrate with someone on earth. The question is whether
Mr.
or not...
Mr. Becker's position with regard to the agreement he has with Cypress, does he contend that any part of that agreement is invalid?
No. If he sued Cypress, he'd have to go to arbitration. I think that.
And so that would include the arbitration delegation provision. He's not challenging any aspect of that provision?
He doesn't challenge the delegation of arbitrability with respect to the folks at Cypress.
That's your interpretation of that provision?
Yes.
And he's not challenging that provision?
Yes.
Okay.
That's true.
Thank you.
And here's my take on that, to pick up on that, if I might, Judge Bush. You know, what they're talking about when they say a delegation clause is they're saying, hey, we make reference to the AAA rules, right? And we've incorporated the AAA rules. But even when you incorporate the AAA rules, you don't ignore the language of the contract. It's not like the language of the contract drops out of the analysis, because the Supreme Court's been clear on this, in Henry Schein, in Rent-A-Center, that the first step is to figure out whether or not you've agreed to arbitrate something, right? And maybe the question is, have you agreed to arbitrate arbitrability? Maybe the question is, have you agreed to arbitrate this dispute? But either way, you start with that.
What language do you think is not being emphasized enough here in the agreement?
By the folks on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, you say there's a fixation on this on corporation business.
Sure.
Inclusion of some language.
Sure.
What language ought we be to be focusing more on?
So the agreement defines who is a party to the agreement.
Right.
It defines specifically
right.
who is.
What's the agreement? What agreement are you talking about?
Are
you talking about the agreement with Cyprus?
Yes.
Okay. You're not talking about the agreement with Delek.
There is no agreement with Delek. Again.
Okay.
Mr. Becker has no contract.
How can there be an employment? There's no employment relation. What are you saying the relationship is between Becker and Delek?
He was their employer for the purposes of the Fair Labor Standards Act.
Pursuant to an unwritten agreement.
Yes. The vast majority of workers in America do not have a written agreement with their employer. I don't know what the percentages are, but it's by far the majority. I don't have a written employment agreement with a single lawyer at my firm, not one, or any staff member. So that is...
Why didn't Becker sue the entity with which he did have an employment agreement?
So part of the reason that the FLSA has the employer standard that it does is so that the real employer can't blame and push the responsibilities off on staffing companies, which are often very thinly capitalized, often operate out of mom-and-pop shops.
Becker's contention is that the real employer did not have an employment agreement with Becker, but the entity with which he did have an employment agreement, what was its role?
So,
is it like a scam, a shell?
It is. It's like paychecks or like a staffing company, right? This is a extremely common situation in the workforce where the real employer will put somebody out as being an employee, a W-2 employee of a PEO or a staffing company. Depending on what state you're in, they have different names.
Well, now your client signed his employment agreement with Cyprus. Cyprus essentially loaned him out to Delek. Delek is the one that actually worked him, under your theory, right?
My theory is that it's the folks at Delek that controlled his work.
Tells him when to come in.
Told him when to come, decided what he was going to get paid, decided when he was going to get paid, decided when he was going to work, decided when he was going to leave, decided if he was going to continue.
Who paid your client? Was it Delek or Cyprus?
So Cyprus physically delivered the check. The money, of course, came from Delek.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
You're not going to agree with the premise, all right?
And okay, fair enough.
It's not a concession to go along.
Okay.
But let's say we read the arbitration agreement clearly to encompass the particular claim that you are asserting against Delek, that it's related to his employment or whatever, you know, with Cyprus. So the agreement encompasses the claim. And now Cyprus is an intervener. The district court let Cyprus in. And Cyprus is here saying, hey, the plaintiff signed an agreement with us. The agreement encompasses this claim. We're a party basically now to the suit. And we're saying enforce it. He signed it. Why shouldn't they prevail on that argument?
So a few things. Right, and I don't want to quibble with you.
I know.
Accepting your premise.
Yeah, no, I know. You're not conceding anything.
Right. I'm accepting your premise, but
right. I appreciate that.
Right.
Often lawyers fight about it.
Right. What claims you and I have agreed to arbitrate? Right. Mm-hmm. You and I have agreed to arbitrate every single claim that we might ever have against each other of any kind, whenever they arose. Right. I now have a dispute with Judge Bush. Right. The breadth of claims you and I have agreed to arbitrate does not answer the question of whether or not I have agreed to arbitrate with Judge Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So in other words, I've agreed to an arbitration, so to speak, against or, you know, where I'm pitted against a certain party. I didn't agree to an arbitration where I'm pitted against a different party.
Right. The question of what you and I have agreed to arbitrate doesn't answer the question of who is banned by the arbitration agreement.
But if the court were to say, okay, notwithstanding some of these arguments, this agreement does encompass this claim, and if I enforce it as a court, or you know, an arbitrator enforces it, it's going to require Mr. Becker to arbitrate against Delek. I know that's not your position, and you know, and then we have Cyprus here. I mean, what answer would you give Cyprus about why, notwithstanding the fact that they're a signatory, your client signed this thing, the claims within the thing, what answer would we give Cyprus about why, hey, he doesn't have to arbitrate anything here?
Well, there are several, right? And this is a good place to pick up with the Section 4 argument, I think. But the Section 4 argument, where you talk about who is a party, like if you read Section 4 as a whole, and I was doing it both this morning and after you brought it up, when they're talking about who is a party to the controversy, right? Who is involved in the fight, right? And you know, you can look at Judge Ginsburg's unanimous opinion, I believe, in the Baden Bank case, right? You're supposed to look at like who's actually fighting here. And everybody agrees that the people who are actually fighting, the people who are actually at odds in this case, is Mr. Becker and Delek. That's who's fighting. And the folks at Cyprus would prefer that they do it somewhere else. That's why they're showing up, right?
But so they're not a party agreed.
They are not a party.
But what if they, you know, what if there's an indemnification provision where they are on the hook? I mean, as a practical matter, aren't they pretty agreed by that?
That's true, but that's also incidental, right? That's the contract. That's how they have agreed to allocate liability amongst themselves, separate and apart from Mr. Becker. Doesn't have anything to do with the scope of Mr. Becker's arbitration agreement, right?
Like, but it might go to whether they're aggrieved under Section 4.
I don't think it goes to whether or not they're aggrieved, right? Because they can't say, because of some other contract that doesn't have an arbitration agreement, by the way, that as far as I know, their MSA has no arbitration agreement. Because of some other contract, we're aggrieved under this contract. Right. That to me is a bridge too far. You and I can't agree.
Is there a case that supports that interpretation of aggrieved, or is this just sort of uncharted territory?
In fairness to he and I disagree as to whether or not there's been some discussion of you know what is a party aggrieved, but I think that both the case that addresses Section 3, which I think is Arthur Anderson, and the Baden Bank case that I just mentioned from Justice Ginsburg, I think that kind of tells us where the court's head is at on this. And I think that they think it's, you know, you look at who's actually fighting, right? And that's who's actually is. Because there's no question that Cyprus could absolutely just sit on the sidelines, and no matter what happens in this case, we couldn't show up with our either arbitration award or court judgment and say, hey, we found the folks at Delek liable, you pay us.
Right, but that's exactly what's going to happen as a practical matter. So, I mean,
no.
Sure it is. Delek's going to go to them and say, cough it up.
Oh, Delek might. I don't.
Sure. But I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know. There's not much case law in party aggrieved, but it's certainly not a stretch to see how they would be. You know, we'd have to take some sort of fictive view of what aggrieved is, or have like real tight blinders on.
Well, I think you can also be guided by what it means to be an intervener, right? And this is cited by the district court in this case. When you intervene, you join the case as it sits. You don't get to change it. You don't get to alter the claims. You don't get to do anything, right? You have joined the case as it sits. So this case was, before Cyprus intervened, a dispute between Mr. Becker and Delek, and after they intervened, it's a dispute between Mr. Becker and Delek. And so the reality is, and they say this, I mean, they're not subtle about it. They're like, look, we're trying to force Becker to arbitrate with...
Do what he agreed to do, in their view.
In their view.
Not like a completely arbitrary that Mr. Becker's being asked to do this. He signed an agreement that whose scope one might read to be quite broad as to the type of claims that are covered.
As to the type of claims, yes, but there's a reason why Cyprus continually loses this argument. right? They've won in one or two courts. They've lost twice in the Northern District of Oklahoma. They've lost at least two or three times.
They lost there, too. It's a tough state to
lose. It is tough, right.
Oregon is worse, but Oklahoma's next.
Right. They've lost in Texas, right? They lost in Tennessee, right? And these aren't judges that are shy about enforcing arbitration agreements, right? These aren't judges that are...
Well, I don't know. We're not... Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see what the Tenth Circuit has to say.
Right.
All that, you know.
So, this is pretty easy from my perspective. And I do want to mention before I sit down that I think the Acrisure case that came down from the Sixth Circuit after briefing closed in this case... is pretty instructive, right?
Which case?
Atricure versus Meng.
Okay.
And the citation for that is 12 F 4th 516. And, you know, frankly, we'd planned to do a 28-J letter on it, but there was a pending motion for a rehearing en banc that was just denied a week or so ago.
Okay.
In that case, that case provides pretty clear guidance here, because in that case we had an agent, basically, the allegation was he was an agent of the company.
I mean, can I ask you a question? I don't mean to interrupt you.
Sure. Not at all.
Can you characterize for us the nature of the argument or arguments you're making as to the reasons why the arbitration agreement ought not to be applied here? Is it scope? Is it enforceability? Is it existence? What would you say?
I would say it's existence. There is no existing agreement to arbitrate between Mr. Becker and Mr. Delek.
Okay.
And the fact that an agreement exists, to quote my own Supreme Court, the fact that Mr. Becker has an agreement to arbitrate with someone else does not answer the question. And the fact that he agreed to arbitrate arbitrability with someone else doesn't answer the question.
Couldn't somebody agree in an arbitration agreement that, hey, if I have any claim against anybody relating to my employment with you, I promise I'll arbitrate that claim. Doesn't matter if it's with you, doesn't matter if it's somebody else, right? Somebody could do that, right?
I think they would be able to.
How would that agreement look different than the agreement in front of us?
It would not say, hey, I'm agreeing to arbitrate with you and only you, and you are agreeing to arbitrate with me.
What? And I'm not trying to give you a hard time. What provision of the contract are you alluding to there?
It is throughout, but it's in the definitions. And the definition says exactly who is agreeing to arbitrate with each other. It defines employer, it defines employee, it defines parties. It tells us who's
agreeing. I know. Is there a specific... Okay. So I guess it'd be Section 5, maybe? I mean, I just want to know what section is the one you think is most pertinent to this argument that excludes the kind of more open-ended or broad agreement that I was hypothesizing.
So one place that is particularly persuasive to me is Section 6,
okay,
the next section. And if we look at subparagraph C, it says employee and employer, both capitalized because they are both defined terms,
uh-huh,
shall only submit their own individual claims in arbitration,
okay,
and will not seek to represent the interest of any other person.
All right. That's a good answer.
And so,
helpful.
Right.
Responsive.
Right.
That's all I ask.
Let me ask you about what I'd ask your opposing counsel. Do you agree that Delek is a designated customer, as that term is used in paragraph 2?
I do, but I also think that paragraph 2 answers the question of what happens with respect to those folks. Because if you continue on in paragraph 2, it says the employee will not make any complaints, allegations, or take any action against the customer without first contacting Cypress and giving Cypress the chance to resolve that.
Was there any action taken by Becker to comply with that requirement here?
I'll be honest with you, I don't know the answer to that question. It's not something that they have raised. They didn't move to stay or anything like that pending that.
All right, anything further? Ms. Tyler? All right, thank you, Mr.
Thank Kirk. You all very much.
We'll hear rebuttal. So you've got all the rebuttal here?
Yes, I do, unless you have
a step. No, not at all. Go for it.
Mr. Bowman. First off, Mr. Birch raised the point that Cypress continually loses these motions.
Don't worry about it.
However, I was just going to point out there are three federal district court cases that come out the exact opposite way, including one from within the Sixth Circuit. It's Altenhofen versus Southern Star Central Gas, where the court in there held that because there was incorporation of the AAA rules, there was a designation, the plaintiff's FLSA claim against the non-signatory was related to or arose out of his employment agreement. The signatory was not a party, and the district court held that the question of whether the non-signatory could enforce the
Are these cases cited in your briefs?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's fine. What else do you have to say?
Okay. The other argument, is Mr. Birch raised about how Cypress is not a party to this dispute. However, I respectfully assert that that is incorrect. When the district judge looked at this issue below, she essentially looked at just the scope of the complaint and essentially applied a Rule 12b standard in analyzing it. However, this court has held that in a motion to compel arbitration, you use a Rule 56 standard. And the uncontroverted evidence in the case shows that it was Cypress who hired Mr. Becker, who paid Mr. Becker, who determined his FLSA exemption status, paid the employer share of taxes. The fact that Cypress billed Delek for the services it provided to it is immaterial to the fact that Cypress is the one who paid Mr. Becker. At the end of the day, a decision in this underlying lawsuit must be made if Cypress's pay practice violates the FLSA. That has to be answered whether or not Cypress is a party or not. And Cypress contracted with Mr. Becker to have the question of whether the way he was paid violates or is compliant with the FLSA. He contracted with Cypress to have that decision made by an arbitrator. And hence, I believe Cypress is an aggrieved party under Section 4 of the FAA in this situation. And second of all, is that I believe you asked, why did Mr. Becker choose to sue Delek? I apologize, Judge Boyce, that was your question. Why did Mr. Becker decide to sue Delek in lieu of Cypress, his actual employer? I would think the only logical conclusion from that is he sued Delek in order to try to avoid application of his arbitration agreement with Cypress.
Is this Farrell case pretty much on all fours with our case?
It involves the exact same issues. I would agree that the district court erred in its decision in denying the motion to compel arbitration in Farrell, just like here. And like here, that case is on appeal to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. And
you think we ought to wait until that comes out before we hand down a decision here?
That is certainly up to this court to wait till the 5th Circuit issues a decision on that. And it's also in your prerogative to make a decision on this case. That's entirely up to your honors as to whether you believe that waiting for their decision is proper.
All right. All right. We thank you all for your arguments, and we will carefully consider your arguments and everything in the briefs in case it be submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.